So Bob, do you want to kick off? And anyone who wants a question, just catch my eye whilst Bob's question is being answered.
Yeah, well, I want to hark back to what was being said this morning, I'm thinking about cause and effect, and we're all used to the idea in science these days that scientific theory of the models, and what I'm suggesting is that cause and effect is wholly a theory of the model. So in the diagram that we had in 113 in the talk, it's wholly a epistemic cause and effect, and it is our perspective upon the uniformities that we find in nature. So this is a kind of model in which you have an essentialist universe, the universe is really there, it has these uniformities in it. But the cause and effect is merely our approach to understanding those uniformities.
I think I agree with that. Except there was the middle quote I had from Strawson, which does seem to me to have some force, that maybe we're hardwired by evolution, or anyway we learn very early, to look at poor uniformities and use them and control things by using them, by predicting them. And so it's a very deeply based view of the uniformities in nature.
Yes, I mean, we don't want to say that Hume is wrong, because we do have this psychological feeling of necessity engraved in us, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't anything in the world.
Oh no, I'm not saying that.
No, but we were saying that there are just uniformities in the world.
Yes, I know.
We have a cotton on here and you.
I know. I'm getting more and more dubious I think that the scientific models you get, don't you, where you get cutting edge science. And you get the phenomena sort of put.
Not necessarily.
No.
What I'm suggesting is, for instance, that you could take a different view of the world. In fact, scientists do take a different view of the world. You have a different interpretation even of classical physics, in which you have a principle called variational principles, in which some uniformities are expressed in the constancy of certain quantities, like energy. Other uniformities are expressed in minimizing the certain quantities. So that's the way physics is often done, and it's not done in terms of the cause and effect model.
No, I realise that. Quite a few of the laws of physics are non-causal by their very nature anyway, because you don't get this kind of... I mean, isn't there the ideal gas law, where everything is kind of simultaneous? So I'm going to shut up. Now, I take on board what you say and I agree with it. Okay. Where that leaves causal necessity, I don't know. I still think that there is something there somehow.
But can I just say one more thing, which is that to just take the fact that people thought about imagination and the importance of imagination, and the fact that the counterfactuals, which seem to be so tied up with cause and effect thinking, come out of imagination. And that's such a human thing. But how do we think that they are part of the physical world? They must be part of our interpretation of this world.
Except that they're physical.
Well, that is true. But you would say that we're all part of the same system.
I'm saying we're physical generators of counterfactuals. Yes.
Well, just with imagination, what you're putting into the black box are still features of the external world. You're just combining them in different ways, aren't you? You're combining them in novel ways.
Some of them are features of the external world, some of them are.
It can't be totally fictitious.
Not totally, no. I didn't say they're fictitious.
No.
Some of them are felt, and therefore features of the internal world, as it were.
They might be mathematical concepts.
They could be levels of serotonin in the bloodstream, or they could be all sorts of things at the ultimate level. But one thing I wonder is, if causality is uniformity, does it alter our understanding of either?
Either which or what? Sorry, either causation or uniformity.
Or uniformity.
Well, only in a negative sense that it demystifies it in that view.
Good.
Well, I was suggesting it was called out of view our perspective on the
I want to go back to Heidi's debate this morning. She relied heavily on the sensuous. And as I understand it, the essence of sensuality, is that there's something called the way things really are. Now, is it self-evident that there is such a thing as the way things are? It seems to be a naive view to say, isn't it, there's the world which is out there, and then there's little else we're trying to understand. We already understand quite a lot, but it's not quite understanding the world. But isn't there a case for saying that this is a very simple topic, that to some extent there's no such thing as the way things are? We play a part in making the world what it is. I'm not a complete anti-realist, but surely there is a possibility that what the world is really like is what each of us contributes to it and put into it.
Could you say a little bit more about that? Do you mean that we sort of divide the world up using our concepts in an arbitrary way?
Yes. Again, I'm informed by risk being applied. You know, the way we carve things up is that who says which is the right way to carve the world?
I guess essentially we tend to believe in natural kinds, that the world just fall into different things, and that there are certain set of properties that make things the thing that it is. So perhaps there is quite a radical difference in view there.
Do you have to believe this? Do I have to accept that there is a way things are? That the essences are there from all time, all over the
world? Well, suppose you can describe the objects in different ways, but they're still the objects that they are.
You don't have to accept it. I mean, lots of people don't believe there are natures in this way, but on the other hand, you have to make a distinction between carving nature at the joints, as Putnam would put it. So there are some concepts we have that we think carve nature at the joints, for example, gold and unicorns and bachelors. And nature recognises the concept of gold, we think, doesn't recognise either the concept of unicorn or bachelor. We recognise the concept of bachelor as real, but not as real, if you want to put it that way, as gold, because it's a social construct. And then a unicorn is also a concept we have, but it's neither as real as bachelor, and certainly not as real as gold. So the idea of carving nature at the joints in our concept is quite a... You know, if we don't want to keep it, we have to explain the difference between the concepts of the three different kinds.
So a different way of putting that, perhaps. We rely on uniformities, getting back to this very basic idea of uniformity, in order to look ahead. To take the next step, to go home, you rely on uniformities. Uniformities, you are going to affect in a causal way, therefore you model the world on the way you affect. Those uniformities are most conveniently, and here I've just screwed it up, most conveniently described in terms of natural kinds. And the predictability of gold, bachelors, and unicorns differs widely. Gold is very much more predictable than bachelors, and bachelors are much more predictable than unicorns. In fact, I mean, unicorns and bachelors, we can actually play about with, as it were. We can redefine bachelors if we want to. They do in the universities, don't they? And unicorns, we can.
They are imaginative, aren't they? I mean,
that's the point.
Can I just ask, if science is so marvellous, why do essentialists always say we know a hell of a lot already? I mean, I'd be amazed if we're not on Earth. Why shan't we one day understand everything?
I don't think we can we?
I think you suggested that we shan't ever know it all.
No.
Why not?
That's a good question. I didn't think of that one.
Isn't the point that even if we were to know it all, we wouldn't know it?
We wouldn't know that we knew it. And there are things that we can't know. There are things like, for example, what happened before the Big Bang, we don't know how we would amass the evidence, do we, to answer such a question. There are some questions
which we
wouldn't know how to find the answer to.
Well, there isn't a before.
Well, possibly one day we might find out how to
find
the answer. You know, we can't even know that we won't know.
Before we spin into these speculations, perhaps I'm out to ask her questions.
After the second of the two weekends on rationality, we had one or two weekends, when it comes buzzing with all the similar sorts of ideas that we've been giving up to, and wrote something of a view which was just amazing. And when I was looking around for a title for it, I called it "Some Causes Are Reasons, All Reasons Are Causes." So my question is to what came before. Do you agree that all the reasons are caused?
No.
What's your bit? I'm not prepared. I want to say yes, but I want to know why you say that.
Well, it was a summary. When I written what I wanted to do, I had realised that that's not what I encapsulated. But a reason is not just some free-floating thing that happens.
By your brain states, your environment,
yes,
your history, by everything that's built in on you. Yeah, I'm happy with that.
That
you
might be. It goes back to this issue of models, I think. The causal model seems to apply essentially at the physical level, up to and including brain states. And if it's true that your reasons to lean on a particular brain state, then you could say the reasons are caused in that physical way. At the same time, it would be a pretty odd reason, wouldn't it, that didn't have a background of argument, of motivation, of the kind of conscious verbalised processes that we all go through in giving reason for things. And so on that level, that seems to be a different model from the physical one. And I'm not sure I want to call those intellectual arguments, so to speak, things you are thinking about, causes.
Mm.
They're not their causes, but they themselves are caused. The fact that one of them has to be sitting in my
head. I don't think anyone disagrees with that, actually, and I don't see why anyone would disagree with that. What the more interesting question is whether reasons are themselves causes. And somebody like Searle, for example, would say that reasons aren't causes because they're not sufficient for their effects, whereas it's in the nature of a cause that it is sufficient for its effects, and so as reasons are not sufficient, they are not causes. But no one would deny that reasons are themselves cause.
Yes, but if you get rid of, if reasons are cause, then the fact, if it is a fact, that reasons themselves act as causes, says nothing about the free will of determinism.
No, the question whether exactly the,
yeah,
the real, the interesting question is whether reasons are themselves causes. That's what says something about the determinism debate or not. Whether reasons are cause is irrelevant because everyone would accept that. The fact, if I have a reason, there is a cause of my having that reason. The interesting thing is, if that's a reason for me to act, and I also have reasons for not to act,
yes,
I have a free choice as
yes.
to whether or not I act? So it's whether reasons are causes that's the question, not whether reasons are caused.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's a
they are.
If the reason actually was.
No, because having a reason, the fact that somebody stamps on my toe, actually that's bad example, I have a reason to do something in virtue of the existence of a certain state of affairs in the world. So my reason to do something is cause, no difficulty with that. It's what then happens with the reason that I have. If that reason suffices for my action, then that reason determines my action. But reasons don't look sufficient for actions, therefore there's a question, are reasons causes? But actually we haven't even touched on that today. None of the speakers here has addressed that point. Everyone's taken a different...
Yes, I know.
I don't think we're saying quite follow it, because I can imagine all sorts of reasons being caused to come into my mind. But I can then imagine me acting freely on the basis of sorting those reasons out.
Yeah.
So the fact that I've got the reason may be caused, but there could be a free will link following that.
That's a completely different question from whether reason is the cause.
If what's going on in our heads is caused,
it's very easy.
Reasons are caused, but
they're called by you. You're the agent.
Okay, you're asking whether reasons are caused. Okay? To me, the answer is yes, no problem. The interesting question is whether actions are caused. To which the answer is, I don't know. Because if there's free will, the answer to that question is no. And the thing is, Searle, for example, says that the thing about reasons and what stops them from being causes is precisely that they are not sufficient for the action that results from them. So it's me, myself, and I, who decide whether to make a reason a cause or not. So the fact that my reasons are caused is irrelevant to whether my reasons cause my actions. That's the decision.
But the determinist story ignores that level of reasons which are not sufficient and applies the causal model throughout, up to and including the decision, does it not? So the question whether reasons are causes may be a way of saying the reasons are the reasons sufficient and part of that causal story, with or without any brain events sort of running below. But even if reasons are not causes and are not sufficient, it doesn't show that there aren't sufficient causes for the action. They could be at the brain level.
Okay, Bill.
Before I ask one question, thank you all for your handout. Thank you
all for your work. Can I just add something to that, very quickly? A couple of people asked me if they could have the full script, because my things are rather short. If anybody gives me their email address, I'll email it.
My question is to you, actually. It follows on from what Marianne was asking about your black box and the choices perhaps should be inside. I've already thought that you put goals as an output, and I would think of a goal as an input.
It is.
And obviously there's a lot of feedback going on here.
There is.
And you mentioned you might have more than one black box.
What I would like to say about the black box is the black box is an aid to thinking.
Yeah.
It should have no ontological value whatsoever. It is simply there in order to enable me to think about it, and hopefully to enable you to think about it. If it's confusing, sorry. The fact is that what goes on at that point, I am saying, is extremely complicated, that to begin to understand the process of any one process of choice making would take probably several books long. Just, you know, shall I have an apple or a pear, it would probably take a very long time. And that is why, precisely, to say reasons are causes, whether reasons are causes, is such a complex issue and cannot be answered yes or no, because what we do with the reason is what's important, and what we do with the reason is hellishly complicated. All I know is that at the end of that time, something happens, and only one thing happens.
I think you may not want to say more about this, but my question actually is what would you say to the statement that
free will and just in your conscious of the fact that you think you might have a choice, i.e. that the accident was caused not by reason, but by happening.
So free will is a sort of ethical phenomenon. It doesn't exist really. It's an illusion that comes from our...
Yeah.
So we have an apparent awareness of making a choice.
Yeah.
But in fact, there isn't a choice there.
Yeah.
It goes back to Kant's freedom as the knowledge of necessity, doesn't it? I mean,
right,
we're aware of necessity.
There are lots of people who think that that is exactly what's... case. I mean, every eliminativist, for example, must go for that, because nobody can deny our belief that we have free will, can they? Because we just have it, it's a fact. So if you're going to say that there is no such thing as free will, you have to somehow explain the illusion of free will, and that's how you explain it. You say it is an illusion. We think we have free will, but we're wrong.
And the Quine argument, as reported, doesn't strike me as terribly forceful. I mean, persuasive, in that just the fact that the motive that you're aware of is your motive, and it's the motive for your action, doesn't again preclude the fact that there could be, I mean, the notion that there could be causation throughout, and this is just a kind of illusory conscious level.
I don't see it as an opposition.
No.
I don't think the word illusion has any meaning in this context, but it's certainly true that if you have consciousness of choice, then it's about the freest kind of view of your life that you have.
I disagree with that, though. Peter is clearly a compatibilist, and I think being a compatibilist is actually much more difficult than you're allowing for, because if you're going to be a compatibilist, you have to be able to say of one action, a token given action, both that it is determined and that it's free.
Mm.
And if you can square that circle, I'd like to know more about it. We can write a paper and make ourselves a lot of money. I'll even put your name in front of mine as long as I'm done.
Yes.
I've been not persuaded by the Popperian arguments about that no such things as absolute laws, but really what we have are theories, which so far have not been disproven, and we can go hundreds of years using these theories to make real progress within there. But I was really beginning to wonder whether what we call causes in many ways something fairly pragmatic, in as much as